Trust your judgment until you see that you're going down the wrong path, and then switch, change. 99.9% of the decisions that we make are not life and death. So you can make a decision and follow that and see, is that the right path or is it not? You're either going to be successful or you're going to learn something, right? So if you learn something, then you can take a different path.
Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends and challenges facing the attractions industry today.
We chat with some of the top leaders in the field and provide resources that will help develop your career in this great industry.
I am Josh Liebman. I am obsessed with the guest experience and helping attractions make that their top priority for success.
And I'm Matt Heller. I am passionate about organizational effectiveness, leadership development, and employee engagement.
Now sit upright, hold on tight, and get ready for the Attraction Pros Podcast.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, Matt, I'm a little chilly. How are you?
Well, I am fantastic, but feeling all warm and toasty.
Oh, good, good. I'm actually not chilly. It's like 65 degrees in Chicago today. I just know the topic of today's episode. Thought I'd make it thematic.
Well, I appreciate that. And that leads into my sort of initial question, which is, when you think of Iceland, what do you think of?
When I think of Iceland, I think of ice, but I also think of, someone told me once that Iceland and Greenland actually need to switch names. That Greenland is all ice and Iceland is all green. I don't know if that's totally true, but that's one of the things that come to mind.
Okay. I think it depends on the time of year. I've never been to Greenland, but today's episode is going to be all about the attraction experience in Iceland. And since we went in the wintertime, there were definitely parts of the island that were completely snowed over. Honestly, there were times when we talked about the fact that it felt like we were on a different planet.
Whoa.
We equated it to Empire Strikes Back,
okay.
the ice and snow planet. And that's what it kind of looked like a couple of times when we were just kind of looking out over the landscape.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where are the Hoth scenes filmed? Was it in Scandinavia somewhere, or was it in Iceland?
That is a great question. I don't know.
Should look that up.
I'm sure there's a listener right now thinking, why don't these guys know this?
Yelling in the car or like at the gym or like walking their dog.
So if you know where that was filmed, please let us know.
All right. Excellent. So how was your trip? I can't wait to hear about all of this and all of the lessons that you learned that apply directly to the attractions industry.
It was amazing. Like I said, landscape wise, there were times when it felt like we were on a different planet. We did a great tour all the way around the island. Now it's not that big, but we did get to see, lots of different, mountains and waterfalls and lots of different nature attractions, if you will. But there were quite a few lessons that I took, and I don't know that I have them really categorized. I just kind of, have a word vomit of all my notes. But I'd love to kind of just kind of throw it out there and see what kind of impressions you have as well.
Yes, let's do it. But first, before that, Finse, Norway. I just Googled it. So now we know that's where the Hoth scenes were filmed in Empire Strikes Back.
Perfect. Perfect. It could have been filmed on Iceland for sure. I would ask where you want to start, but I haven't given you any kind of inkling about what we're going to talk about yet.
I'm just going to sit back and relax and enjoy the ride here.
Okay. Okay. So the first thing I actually want to talk about is a hot dog.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm excited already.
So when we were kind of researching what to do in Iceland and especially Reykjavik, because that's where we're going to start. We had like a day and a half in Reykjavik. And one thing kept coming up was this Iceland hot dog. And I'm not going to try to pronounce the name. I'm going to butcher it completely. But it's a hot dog that you can apparently only get in Iceland. And I've had hot dogs before. You've had hot dogs. It intrigued me. So one day, the first day we were in Reykjavik, we said, let's go try to find those hot dogs. And of course, it had been hyped up so much and advertised so much that you think you're going to go to this big hot dog palace and you think it's going to be this massive experience. It was like a little hot dog stand on the side of the road, right? You walk around this massive building and there it is. But here's what was interesting. The line of people waiting to get a hot dog was at least 50 or 60 deep, right? It was spilling out into the road. And again, it was just this little hot dog stand, probably a 10 by 15 building that they were making these hot dogs out of. And you know, apparently they are again the kind of Iceland hot dog. So one of my first takeaways was, I hope the hype is worth it, you know, because we've been hyped up with this hot dog. So we get in line, and let me also, you know, kind of set the stage. It was kind of raining. It was cold, like not the day that you'd probably think about standing in line 50 or 60 people deep to get a hot dog. But we get up there, and you know, you can order it a couple of different ways. I, of course, wanted to order it in whatever way it came. Like I want the regular way. I want to experience that. So first of all, there's raw onions on the bottom, and then there's crispy onions on top of that. Then they put in ketchup. Then they put in a hot dog. Then they put on top, they put mustard, and they also put this stuff that they call mayonnaise, but it was brown. And I don't know exactly what it was, but that's what they called it. And that's how they serve the hot dog. So we all get our hot dogs, we walk away. Is it the best hot dog I've ever had? No. Is it really cool? Is it really good? Did the crispy onions and that cool brown sauce add something to it? Absolutely. But I think what I walked away was with that was, again, you can kind of hype up anything. And if you get people to think about, wow, I really need to have that. I don't want to say the presentation doesn't have to be spectacular, but you've got an audience that really wants to come be part of that. And the marketing had a lot to do with that. So it was a good hot dog. I will say that. And we had a couple of others throughout our time in Iceland. But that was one of my first takeaways was, you know, just going to this little hot dog stand in Iceland in the rain and getting that hot dog.
So, do you think that it was much more about the hot dog, but you standing in line in the rain behind 50 people to wait in line for the hot dog, that was as much of the experience as the actual hot dog itself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that, and I didn't you know, survey everybody in line, but they were all dressed very warmly, like they knew what they were doing. They didn't look like tourists. They looked like they were locals. So like this was a local thing that you kind of had to have. Does that make sense?
It does. And curious, was the hype from within the group? Was it like how did you learn about this hot dog stand, and what was your expectation set going into it? I know you mentioned like you got there and it wasn't a big hot dog palace. You said it wasn't the greatest hot dog you've ever had, but it was such a unique experience. What was the scene that was presented to you and by whom that led to the decision to go get the hot dog?
So we had heard about it like through our research, what to do in Reykjavik, right? And this hot dog place comes up, and there's a couple of different locations. And so that got our interest piqued. And you know, we always like to try the local cuisine when we go someplace. We like to try the what the locals are eating and that kind of thing. And so that kind of intrigued us a little bit. So we had a group of 10 of us that were traveling together. So we start talking about it, and we want to go try it and stuff like that. So we had just finished some morning-ish drinks. Some people had some Bloody Marys and whatnot. And so we said, well, let's go find the hot dogs, right? So I pull it up on my phone and I find where the hot dog stand is, and we asked the bartender where to go. And so we followed that thing, and I was kind of the tour guide because I had the GPS on my phone where to go. And we just went, and we said, anybody who wants to go get a hot dog, let's go. And so it was just kind of that sense of exploration, which is very natural for Iceland. We just wanted to go and experience what the locals experience.
Would you recommend that others do that if visiting Reykjavik?
Oh, absolutely. You mean get the hot dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I would also recommend, this is not part of my notes, but there's a bar called Bastards in Reykjavik that I did not have one, but according to my friends who got the Bloody Mary there, it's the best Bloody Mary they've ever had.
Whoa.
Right? They smoke the rosemary, they smoke the tomatoes, they smoke the whole glass. I mean, it was outstanding, according to people who are well versed in Bloody Marys.
All right. Well, so far, I am sold on going to Reykjavik just to get this Bloody Mary and to stand in line for this hot dog.
Yeah,
All
yeah, yeah. So I got another one.
right, let's do it.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about premium because we've talked about that a little bit. You know, we had Amanda on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. She talked about premium seating and that premium experience. And we had an experience that we weren't expecting to have because we were going based on a local's recommendation for someplace to go for dinner. Okay. So we said we had just done a snowmobiling tour and we said, where can we go in Reykjavik? Where would you go? And he goes, well, there's this place called the Fish Company that I would go to. Now, with a name like Fish Company, we weren't expecting a whole lot. We were expecting, you know, to get some fish, but not the truly premium and elevated experience that we got. So first of all, you had to go walk down some steps at a very unassuming entrance, right? It just had a round sign that said Fish Company. You walk down some steps, walk into this kind of darkened restaurant, and it was 5 o'clock. They had just opened. We said, do you have a table for 10? They said, yes, we do. Absolutely right this way. This nice big round table that we had. And it was one of those places where the wait staff, like there's granted we had 10 people, but there were separate people for the water and separate people for, you know, bringing your appetite. You know, I mean, there was just lots of people that were tending to us. But what kind of made it premium? Number one was the quality of the food. One of the guys that was with us, he's kind of what would you say, an amateur chef, if you will. Like he really loves his food and everything. And he's toured the world in his previous job. He's now retired. But he said that was one of the top 10 meals he's ever had in his life.
Whoa.
Okay. So
That's good.
I thought it was really good. Great meal, but like for him to put it in that upper echelon was premium, like in terms of the quality of the food. But it was also that when they would bring something out or they would explain the specials or something like that, I mean, they really talked about what was in it. So you bring out this plate of food, and I can tell what the fish is, but they're like on the dish that I got, there were three different fish, right? So they said, the brown one is this, the red one is this, the red one. So there was all this explanation that it may sound like it's, you know, just kind of a, I don't know if it's a throwaway, but like they're just explaining it to make you feel better about it or to so you understand it. But it really enhanced our ability to talk about it later. And then we could say, oh, I really like that fish. Oh, I really like that part of the dish. Or, you know, if somebody else got the same thing across the table, you could really talk about the different kind of things that you got. And you could, I think it really elevated the experience because it wasn't just this really great tasting plate of food, but you knew what you were eating.
Yeah.
So to me, that leveled it up to the next level of premium.
Well, it's one of those granular service touch points of when you deliver the food, the way that the food arrives at the table means so much in their service, their hospitality had to match, like you said, the quality of the food and being, you know, for one of the members of your group or one of the top 10 meals in his entire life.
Yeah.
If they would have come over and be like, all right, who got the whatever fish, right? And just like plated it down and it didn't matter, then if it's just about the food, then the experience itself drops a little bit versus they were able to take something that was already such, like you said, a premium product, and they were able to elevate that further, bringing in the intangibles that then enhanced your experience, which created a greater conversation afterwards. And that conversation leads to memory, and that memory leads to advocacy. So here we are talking about the Fish Company in Reykjavik on the podcast. That now you're sharing the food was great and the experience was just as phenomenal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to share one other thing about the staff
Yeah.
at Fish Company, but really most of the experiences that we had with people, service people, hospitality people that we had in Iceland, they all made eye contact, right? Even as they were explaining the dishes, they weren't just looking at the dish, they were looking at us. as they looked around the table. Also, you know, like I said, other service people really, I think, I don't want to say they went out of their way, but it was very genuine in the way that they were making eye contact and creating a very very palpable bond between human beings, if you will, right? Part of the reason I want to bring that up is because I want to contrast that with an experience that I had the very last night at a hotel in the US. I went to the front desk to ask about the shuttle to the airport. And I asked my question. The gentleman behind the desk was standing there. He was looking down at his monitor, right? I asked my question. First of all, he kind of looked up when I came over and then he looked back down. I asked my question. He never looked up. He said his rote answer, right? ROTE answer. And then he went about his business. And I don't know if it was because we had gotten such great hospitality in Iceland that it really hit me how much I appreciate eye contact. And this thought popped into my head. When something is at a premium, when you get it, it becomes more premium.
Go
Hopefully that made
on.
sense. So when I noticed that he wasn't making eye contact, I recognized how much that impacted the interaction and how much, when I think back to some of those interactions I had in Iceland, it made them more special. It made them more premium. So he was putting it at a premium by not allowing it to happen, right? And when we think about premium, it's exclusive, right? It doesn't happen all the time. And so when you say, at least this is how my mind was working, when you say something is at a premium, that means that it doesn't happen all the time, right? But when it does, it becomes much more special. So then I reflected back on my time in Iceland with all those folks. And I'm not saying everybody in the US doesn't, you know, provide eye contact, but this particular gentleman didn't. And it
Right.
was a stark contrast to what I experienced when I was in Iceland. So that also got me thinking about that concept of premium, that when it is rare that something like that happens, when it does happen, it becomes that much more elevated. Did that make sense?
That does make sense.
Okay.
Yes. And I think that like the takeaway from that is the challenge to say, how can we go even deeper with premium? Because something like premium has no plateau. It can continue to extend. So you could look around and you could say, all right, well, what is the baseline in my surrounding area or the competitors, or at least like with whatever the guest is expecting? And then when I deliver that premium, there's the delta, right? There's the differential between what it is that they expect, because this is what they're used to experiencing. And then there's the experience you're providing to them. So where's that difference right there? If they are not used to experiencing something premium, then there's going to be a greater difference than perhaps someone else who is used to experiencing more premium service or more enhanced service or more enhanced experiences or whatever it is. There's a smaller differential, right?
Yeah.
So the challenge for everyone listening to this and in everything that we're doing is to say, okay, can we make it even more premium and using the intangibles to do it? Because you gave two examples right there. One is you had the wait staff who demonstrated their proficiency on what it is that you were ordering to be able to enhance what it was that you were eating, right? They weren't in the kitchen. They were not the ones preparing the food, but they are working side by side with the culinary team to say, okay, you are making the food. We are putting it on the pedestal that it deserves to be on, right? On the flip side, the gentleman who gave you the information about the shuttle to the airport gave you exactly the information that you were looking for, right? Like he, but you know, quote unquote, like in air quotes, like did his job, right? You needed to know information about how to get to the airport. He gave you information to get to the airport. You had an expectation based off of everything in the past, was it week, 10 days or so that had filtered through this. And he said, okay, this is no longer the Matt Heller. I mean, I don't think it would be to begin with, actually, but based on just everything you had been experiencing that compounded upon each other to say, man, this is, you know, this guy couldn't cut it with the service providers I've been interacting with for the last week and a half.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's something that maybe when you when you experience that all the time, you might start to take it for granted, but you really notice it when it's not there. And I think that's what that, you know, the kick in the face for me was like, oh my goodness. This is something so different than what I've been experiencing for the last 10 days. So it was really interesting.
And everything we're talking about is intangible. You didn't tell me if you were staying at a one-star or five-star hotel because that's irrelevant for the type of experience you described.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. You ready for another one?
Let's do it.
All right. This one is about trusting your crampons.
Okay.
Do you know what crampons are?
I not even going to take a guess.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So crampons are things that you would put over your shoe that have spikes in them that help you walk on slippery or icy surfaces.
Okay.
Okay.
It is
So
a modified traction for your footwear.
So
Like
like
cleats almost, or like, okay.
exactly. So most of us were wearing, you know, hiking boots and things like that. But when you go to certain places, they give you these things that are usually, they've got like a rubber thing around the top that holds it onto your foot. And then the bottom are steel cleats, if you will, that, you know, really help your traction when you're walking on slippery and icy surfaces. So we got some of those when we went to walk on top of a glacier. That was part of the things that we were going to do on our tour. And now, essentially, the glacier is a 100 football fields of ice, right? So it's just ice as far as you can see. And so, of course, if you're going to walk on top of it, you need some assistance in the footwear department. So that's where the crampons come in. And so they give everybody the crampons and we walk out to the glacier. And many of us, when we first started walking, were walking very gingerly, right? We are on a massive sheet of ice, right? You live in Chicago. I'm sure it gets icy there at times. If you still only lived in Florida, I would say you might not know what we're talking about. But you know what icy conditions are like, right?
Sounds
So
like this doesn't even compare.
so they you know they gave us these things, and we were, like I said, kind of walking kind of gingerly because we didn't trust our crampons yet, right? We didn't trust that they were going to really help us. And I know that sounds funny to say that, but anyway,
Sorry if I keep giggling a little at the word crampon,
that's
but
okay.
yes.
That's okay. So we're walking kind of gingerly, and the tour guide stops us, and he said, "I'm just going to stop you right here. We were not to our, you know, first destination where we were going to go down into a tunnel and a cave, ice cave, and that kind of thing." He says, "I notice how some of you are walking." He says, "You just need to walk normally. Like, take heavy foot, you know, heavy steps, walk normally. Trust," this is where he said it, "trust the crampons. Because if you walk too gingerly, the little metal spikes will not go into the ice and you will get no more extra traction." And of course, he said, "The reason that this is so important is because on this glacier where it's windy and, you know, who knows what's going to happen, you know?" He goes, you could fall over, you could trip, you could, land on your side or something like that." And he said, "If you look down the glacier, there's a pitch downward." He said, "You're not going to stop for a couple of hundred yards, and you may fall into a crevice, you may fall into an ice cave. So it's really important that you trust your crampons," right? So that got us all walking a little differently. Right. We started to trust our crampons. We watched how he did it. He just walked normally. And it was such a difference when we just started to walk normally, how the crampons would grab the ice. And it was a much more confident walking experience. And my big takeaway from that phrase, as you can imagine, just really, you know, rung in my head for the entire trip. Because I think sometimes we are timid in what we do and we don't trust our own judgment. We don't trust the process. We don't trust, you know, that somebody else actually has our best interest at heart. And so I think there's some lessons in there about, you know, trusting a situation or trusting the equipment that you're using, you know, if you know that it's sound and it's working well, that can help us be more confident and, you know, like Star Trek says, boldly go where no one has gone before. So to kind of boldly go forward, take those heavy steps, trust your crampons. I think there's a lot of lessons there.
I love that you took trust your crampons and turned it into, it was something that was so literal and like definitively like exact in the moment. And you've taken it into something that you could extrapolate that from and say, well, it's kind of a metaphor for, you know, for life as well. And everything that we're dealing with, where do you see its most direct application here? Like for perhaps a leader who might be moving into a leadership position, and maybe they feel like they're kind of going into the unknown, and perhaps that unknown is causing some anxiety, and that anxiety is causing some motion towards the glacier, towards the crevice, right? But instead of kind of like trust your leaders around you, trust your peers, trust even your team, where can we take this?
Well, I think the cool thing to kind of think about are, what are your crampons? You know, so trust your blank, and then you can fill in the blank. So one of the things that kept coming back to me was your judgment, right? And you prefaced it, right? You're moving into a leadership role. Your judgment is going to be challenged, mostly by yourself, right? Because we're our own worst enemy. We're the ones who are going to say, oh, that's not the right decision. Or, you know, I'm not good enough for something. But if you're being put into a role, you know, there's confidence that you're going to be successful at that. Are you going to be perfect? Absolutely not. You know, I mean, even you and I starting this podcast, we had to trust that there was a process that we would find eventually, and we would start off kind of shaky. But if we kept doing it long enough, we would get to a point where we were decent at it, right? And then we would hopefully get to a point where people wanted to listen, right? And so you have to trust in that. And I think that judgment piece of it, you know, trust your judgment until you see that you're going down the wrong path, and then switch, change. You know, 99.9% of the decisions that we make are not life and death. So you can make a decision and follow that and see, is that the right path or is it not? You're either going to be successful or you're going to learn something, right? So if you learn something, then you can take a different path, but you have to trust that judgment. I think there's also, you know, a clear tie-in to trusting a process, you know, because so often we want immediate results, and this is not a generational thing. This is a human thing. Like, you want to see results. How many people go to the gym for 2 days and I'm not, you know, I haven't lost 50 pounds, so I'm quitting, right? Trust the process. Trust the fact that you're going to make mistakes and you're going to have hard times. But if you continue to do your best and put your best foot forward and seek out assistance from other people and, you know, try to improve day by day, that process will take you much farther than doing nothing. And you can't know what that process is going to be a day later, you know, a week later. You've got to look, you know, 10 years later, 5 years later, what has that process taught me over that time that has changed me as a person and as a leader? But in that moment, you have to trust it.
Nice. Love it. Trust the crampons.
Trust the crampons. Exactly.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
That could be a hashtag.
Could be.
Yeah.
It probably will be one of the quotes that go out on social on this episode. So
perfect.
We'll
okay.
All right. What's the next one?
So this is actually related to my walk on top of the glacier, because as I mentioned, we also got to go down into the caves. Posted some of these pictures on social as we did it, but we were completely immersed in this ice structure, this cave. It was literally all around us. I mean, sometimes the caves were like this small. You had to wear a helmet, you know, so you didn't hit your head. And even if you hit your head, it wouldn't hurt. So we were truly immersed. And what it got me thinking about are so many of the attractions and experiences now that are trying to be immersive, right? We hear that word all the time. And it just made me wonder, can we ever truly compete with what is naturally immersive, with what is manufactured immersive? And this is not to be a condemnation of anybody who's trying to create immersive experiences, but if I were to go to some place and say, I would like an immersive experience, you know, manufactured of going into an ice cave, I don't know that it would compete with the real thing. I'm not sure where to go with this, but it was a thought.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that that's both a challenge and an interesting opportunity for our industry. And the first thing I think about is when I was in college, when I went to school getting my degree in theme parks and attractions management, I remember sitting in Intro to Theme Park Management taught by Professor Addie Millman. Amazing. I remember there was one thing he said on the first day that really resonated and kind of added some context really to this conversation. And he said, people are willing to give up authenticity for security and a guaranteed experience. And the example that he gave was the safari tour, the Kilimanjaro safari tour at Disney's Animal Kingdom. He said, you could pay however many thousands of dollars to fly to Africa, go on a safari, spend several days, and you might not see a single animal, or you might get eaten. Alternatively, you can go to Disney's Animal Kingdom and you can have that guaranteed experience where you see every single animal that's on the tour, and you're doing it in a very controlled environment. So it's the trade-off is
Yes.
really about what it is. And whether it's this immersive ice experience or whether it's the safari experience, it's, hey, this is what we could do to have a taste of that, right? I've never been to space, but I've been to space many times on various attractions, right? On Mission Space, on so many different experiences within theme parks or at Kennedy Space Center, right? That's another one that comes to mind. So it's an interesting way of phrasing it, of saying, can we truly compete with the manufactured immersive experiences versus the natural immersive experiences? And I don't know. I even wonder. I think that's a valid question, but I also wonder, like, is that the question, right? Is it that, is the attractions industry competing with, like, if somebody said, oh, I just went on safari in Africa, I'd be like, well, I don't need to. I've been to Animal Kingdom, right? Like, is that a fair comparison, right? I've
Right.
seen all the same things, but maybe it's the stepping stone. It's the taste of something that perhaps we might not be able to have in our lifetime. We have a guest who's coming up on the podcast actually in the next several weeks from a VR experience, from something that there's, I think, like 1,000 people in the world or something like that are qualified to do, or I think it's like in the low thousands. But through that VR experience, it's accessible to anybody. It's accessible to children and grandparents and everything in between. So it's is it that we're competing with naturally immersive experiences, or are we replicating them in ways that people can feel as if they have done them? And they know full well that they're not doing the actual real thing, but being able to understand what it feels like.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know why I use that word compete,
Good.
because
Fair.
maybe it's not right, maybe it is. But I definitely see where you're coming from. And what it made me think of also were zoos and aquariums, right? I'm probably never going to see a beluga whale in its truly natural habitat, but I can go to Georgia Aquarium and watch them for as long as I want. And so that to me is maybe like you said, it's a great stepping stone, right? If someone's never going to go to Iceland for whatever reason, they don't want to, can't afford to, it's not on their bucket list, whatever, but they can go to an experience, they can go to an ice bar, right? And feel like, hey, I've been in Iceland, right? Or something like that. I've been immersed in ice. Maybe that's a similar feeling. It's to me, it was just that question of there are so many experiences that we're trying to replicate. Which I again, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. But when you do the real thing, the actual thing, it's very different. It's more visceral to me than this is just me talking. There
As it
was,
should, frankly,
yeah, oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
as two attraction pros talking, like it should be, right? When you do the real thing, right?
Well, and I think there are things that you do outside of the parameters of what that I'll just use manufactured experiences versus the real one. Like in a couple of different places, I started building snowmen, right? Throughout Iceland, you know? And they were just little itty bitty ones, you know? But we were down in this ice cave and I was waiting for people to come out of one of the caves, and there was enough snow there that I could build a little snowman, right? And then of course, I picked them up and I started throwing snowballs at my friends and stuff. And so, you know, those kind of non-planned experiences, I think, are some of the things that truly enhance the overall experience. And when somebody says, "How was Iceland?" Was that actually part of the tour? No. You know, there was a place we got to stay that had dogs running around, and you know I love dogs, so one of my favorite memories was playing with a dog. Does that have anything to do with Iceland? Probably not, but it happened on that trip, so of course it enhanced the overall experience. Yeah.
Cool.
So,
I also, and this is sort of like kind of going back a couple minutes here, and this might like open Pandora's box a little, but there's the natural immersive experiences that are replicated in themed environments, and then there's those that are mythical worlds and
absolutely.
intellectual property, like walking into Harry Potter, walking into Hogsmeade, right? Walking into, you know, Galaxy's Edge. You know, it's like, oh, you know, this, you know, maybe I'll do the real thing one day. It's like, no, like this is it.
And that's a great point. That's a really, really great point that there are worlds that were created, you know, and we see them in our mind or we see them on a movie screen, and now we get to see them in real life. So that to me is a little bit different because it's not something you can do in quote unquote real life.
But I do want to touch on actually your last point right there of the snowball fight and playing with the dogs. And it reminds me of when we had Vince Cadlebeck on a few years ago, when he talked about the importance of giving guests agency over their experience. You were on a tour, right? When you were in these ice caves and started building these snowmen, having these snowball fights, but that wasn't part of the tour, right? You had the agency to do that. When you talk about what made the tour memorable, it was what you brought to that experience. So even the, for those who, you know, might be watching and listening to this in their manufactured immersive environments, what type of agency can you give to your guests? And of course, obviously to hear more on that, definitely like find the interview we did with Vince a few years ago, that then create those experiences within experiences that are less planned and less linear than what the majority of attractions tend to be in the interest of operations and efficiency.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
All
So
right.
I've got a bunch more, but one more just in the sake of time that I want to
Perfect.
talk about today.
Let's do it.
All right. So this has something, or I think is related to something you will sincerely appreciate, and it has to do with recovery, you know, guest recovery, service recovery. We had two instances where there was either incorrect information given, or even in one case where it's entirely possible, we're still looking into it, that we screwed up. Okay. But the reaction of the people that were handling the situations were almost identical. They were two completely different situations. The reaction was so in the one case where we didn't get the right information, right? We were told one thing about, you know, when something was supposed to happen, and it was, you know, like an hour later. The person who was dealing with that said, "Well, it's not right that you got the wrong information, but we're gonna make it right." You know, oh no, she said, "It's not fair." And I don't know if there was a, you know, translation from her native language to English, but she said, "It's not fair that you got the wrong information." And essentially she said, "I'm not gonna penalize you because somebody else gave you the wrong information." You know, it could have very easily been, "Well, no, that doesn't happen for another hour, so you're gonna have to wait." You know, so she said it's not fair that that happened. The other situation was we were supposed to get dropped off at a certain hotel after a tour. Okay. Well, that tour was listed as a Reykjavik hotel, but it was actually near the airport, which was about 45 minutes away. Okay.
Oh.
And the tour guide said, "Normally, I just drop people off here in Reykjavik, and there was supposed to be a transfer arranged from here, this drop-off point, to your hotel." And this is one where either we didn't request it or our travel agent didn't request it. We're not sure where the ball was dropped, but the story is in the service recovery because Dominica, who was our tour guide that day, she said, "I'm really not supposed to do this," but she said, "It's not fair that this happened to you." She goes, So I'm going to drive you to your hotel, right? So she drove 45, an hour and a half out of her way, because then she had to drive back to Reykjavik. This is after a long day of, you know, of a tour. She drove us all the way to that hotel. We gathered up as much Icelandic money as we could, you know, to tip her for this, because this was way above and beyond. And they also, on the buses over there and probably here, they have trackers, right? So that they know where the bus goes, especially if it gets off the road or something like that. It's a GPS thing. They know exactly where the bus is. So she was like, again, you know, I'm really not supposed to do this. They're going to know I'm off course, but I don't think it was right that this happened. So essentially, both people were saying the right thing to do is. And I found that so refreshing is the wrong word, but it was so people-centric, right? It was so focused on, it doesn't matter how we got here. Let's not fight about that. It doesn't matter. What matters is I'm going to take care of you. Now, of course, they had to have the latitude to do that. And I actually found out who her supervisor was. I sent him an email and said she should not get in trouble for this, because this was her being a wonderful human being. She's an asset to your company. So I hope she doesn't get in trouble for this, even though she went way off course and beyond her scheduled time. So it was just that thought process of, I'm going to do what's right for this situation, and that's what's most important. That I thought you would appreciate.
I love a good recovery story. So thank you for sharing that. What I love about this, and in both instances, they said it's not fair that this happened,
Yes,
right? Like
same
that this
wording.
happened to you. That's just so raw, right? Like it's so direct. It's a little bold, right? There's nothing corporate about that statement, right? It's not like trying to be soft and fuzzy and like tiptoe into it. Be like, it is not fair what happened to you, like. Point blank, which immediately shows you their level of concern, almost their like level of intensity of concern that the experience you had was not the experience that you should have had,
Yes.
which then transitioned into immediately, we're going to fix it and we're going to make it right. We're going to do exactly what it is that you need, that you expected, regardless of how we got to this point. And the recovery was exact. Like she just said, well, what's the most common sense solution? I'm going to drive you to the hotel. You know, it's not, here's a gift card for when you come back. You know, it's not like, you know, and like maybe like do that in addition. Like if you want to like if like that's your recovery toolbox or whatever it is, but it is, let's make it right. Let's get these people to where they need to be physically, literally, geographically. So.
Well, and I think, you know, you talk about the last or latast model. Like, she never apologized.
She didn't need to say, I'm sorry.
No. And we knew it wasn't her fault, right?
Right.
But she acknowledged that what we, just like you just said, what we went through was not what we should have been going through.
Yeah.
And then
When
she just made it right.
I talk about apologizing, I always preface it and say it's not just about saying I'm sorry, or it's not even just about like apologizing like as a verb, but it is expressing regret for what occurred and aligning your statement with what you experienced is not what you should have experienced.
Yeah,
Cool.
absolutely. Absolutely.
Ah,
So
awesome. Love
those
it.
are some of my biggies. What are your quick takeaways from some of my takeaways?
Well, the hot dog stand, Richard's fish company. No, I think that, you know, based on your experience, it sounds like you had premium hospitality is. I mean, I think that's my biggest takeaway from the stories that you shared, from the experiences that you had, and the experiences that you developed along the way. The experiences that you made it yourself, right? In the ice cave and building the snowman, and having the snowball fights, and playing with the dogs later on. Like all of those, it's you are just as responsible for creating your experience as the surrounding environment is. So I think that that's kind of an interesting takeaway as well of you know, when guests visit a theme park, they're, you know, some of the ownership is on them to make sure that they have a satisfactory experience rather than do all this for me. You get out of it what you put into it.
Absolutely. No, and I think that's a really great point that in these situations, it was kind of set up for us to have some of that autonomy, right? And that agency in our experience. And I think sometimes we try to manage that experience a little bit too much, right? And we try to create, something where, every single moment is planned and every single thing, well, and against me, right? I'm not speaking for everybody on a vacation every time they go on vacation, but I think for a lot of people, you need that balance of structure versus free time so that people can have those moments that they weren't expecting that raise the level of everything that they just went through.
Yeah, little bit of serendipity. It's
Yeah,
possible.
absolutely.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thanks for
Yeah.
sharing all these takeaways. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I would love to hear anybody's experiences who's been to Iceland. I'd love to compare notes. But for everybody out there who's watching and listening, just remember, we are all attraction pros.
Thanks for listening to the Attraction Pros Podcast.
Make sure to subscribe so you can tune in when new episodes release. And even better, please leave us a review on iTunes.
For more information, visit attractionpros.com.